Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Dustin Schutte. You remember him. He used to be a regular here until he decided to take off and become a world traveler the last couple of weeks. Dustin, how are you doing? Welcome back.
I'm doing great. Thank you. I returned with these nice headphones that cover my ears. I look like a professional. I just need a microphone now. As much as I miss this show, it was good to kind of get away for a couple of weeks and just enjoy the peace and quiet of the mountains of Blue Ridge, Georgia.
Well, that sounds like a great time. Even better, and I hope you don't mind me sharing this. You told me about it. You got to go away with your father and your brother, and it was hiking, it was golfing. That sounds like an incredible trip.
Yep, it was great. We played a couple rounds. I shot in the 80s twice, which that's for me, Jim. That's whew. My brother, I'll tell you a quick story. My brother won all three rounds and I hate it. He's my younger brother. He's not supposed to be better than me at anything, but he's better at me than in golf. But the one thing my dad and I had on him was we each had two birdies in the rounds and he had zero. So it was like, do you hear those birds chirping out there? We don't hear it for you. They're only when we got the putters in, right? So everybody had their moments. We had a lot of really good food. As you said, we went hiking and just a really fun time because, I don't know. I probably haven't said it on this show, but it's been a couple years since the three of us got together. So it was really good to be able to spend a week with my dad and brother.
Now, you're not local with either your brother or father, are you?
No, actually, I live in St. Louis. My dad lives in Indianapolis, so he's not too far. We can meet up, right at the Indiana-Illinois line to play golf or have dinner or something. And then my brother lives in Gainesville, Florida. He actually works with the UF track program, so he's a little bit further away.
And living in Florida, he gets to practice his golf game year-round, which I'm sure you reminded him, right?
He gets to play, I think he plays once or twice a week. So, yeah, only losing to him by three strokes on two different rounds was kind of a win for me.
I'm telling you, you should have asked for some strokes there, Doug.
I should have. I should have.
You beat the spread.
I did. If I stay within five, I feel pretty good about myself. And I did that on two of the four rounds, maybe. So half the time I beat the spread.
That's fantastic. And I used to get out and golf. I was telling you before the show with my brothers, my father, my uncle, fantastic time. My uncle and dad are long gone, but I still get a chance occasionally to still play with my brothers. And it's the absolute best. I mean, no one better than your brothers, and they yep. know you better than anyone. Inside jokes and everything else going. So that's the best time. Glad you had a great time. Tell you what, how about if we move on though, Dustin, talk some college football. What do you say?
I'm ready for it. Let's do it.
All right, the polls have come out. The coach, look, we're going to use the coaches poll for this conversation. I know the AP poll has just come out, but the information we put together was based on the coaches poll, so that's what we should use. Just first of all, I know we each have the coaches poll sitting in front of us, Dustin. You take a look at this. What strikes you?
Well, here's something interesting, and it's not necessarily pertaining to the coaches poll, but I had seen some other kind of mock polls. A lot of media outlets will put out their polls or their predictions or whatever. And there were a lot of places that had Penn State number one. And then to this point, and I'll kind of preface this, number one is Texas, number two is Ohio State, number three is Penn State, number four is Georgia, number five is Notre Dame. That's in the coaches poll. What interested me is I saw this comment on social media, and I, for the life of me, cannot remember who it was. So I don't know if it was Adam Brenneman, Landon Tangwall. I know it was a Penn State person, but I don't remember who it was on social media. when Penn State was number one, Texas 2, Ohio State 3, made the comment, just make Texas and Ohio State 1 and 2 because the winner of that game is going to jump Penn State anyway. And that made a lot of sense to me. So I think that that's probably the right decision to put those two teams in the first two spots if you think they're top five worthy. Just for the simple fact of, number one, now you have a 1-versus-2 matchup in the first week of the college football season. So how could it start off any better than that? And then number two, yes, whoever wins that game is going to be number one because Penn State doesn't play anybody until what, like week five of the season? Yes. So even though Penn State may be the best team in college football, we're not going to see them really tested until a couple weeks into the year.
Although I think, Dustin, you might be overlooking those Villanova Wildcats. You're right. And I'll tell you what my comment was months ago about upcoming polls was, you got to put Texas, Ohio State 1 and 2 either way, because they play that first week. It creates a storyline for everybody that one is playing two. I've now seen reaction to this where some people are upset. Oh, they just did it because of that week one matchup. Fine. Who cares? You know, because you start with the question, and the preseason polls mean absolutely positively nothing. Which is why we're talking about it, though, by the way, right?
Exactly, yeah.
It gives us something to talk about. That's the value of them, and perhaps the only value of them. And if you could create this storyline for week one, that you have one, not just 1-versus-2, Dustin, but, and this will lead to another discussion, you have Southeast Conference versus Big Ten. That's the storyline, Dustin. So what's wrong? What's wrong with making those two teams 1 and 2?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And especially in this, like, it doesn't ultimately matter. As you mentioned, it doesn't matter till the college football playoff rankings come out, and whether it's late October or early November. I can never remember the first date of those. But essentially, the coaches poll, the AP poll, they give people like you and I stuff to talk about. It doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things until the committee sets out its first top 25. So I'm all in favor of it. And by the way, again, if these were two top five teams, if it's 4-versus-5, don't you think the winner of that game is probably still going to then be the number one team? Now, admittedly, I know who Penn State plays. I don't know who Notre Dame plays week one, and I don't know who Georgia plays week one. So maybe you could make the argument for one of those teams, but If you think that these are both top five teams, why wouldn't you just put them number one, number two, create a lot of excitement? As you mentioned, this is a Big Ten SEC. The winner of that, the conference team is going to be swinging the flag all over the 50-yard line, aren't they? Whichever conference wins that game. So, yeah, I have no problem with it. And again, like I said, I think you could make the argument probably to put Penn State number one, or maybe you could make the argument to put Georgia number one, but the winner of that game is going to just leapfrog the all previously ranked number one team. So it ultimately doesn't really matter.
It's either going to be Tony Petitti or Greg Sankey raising the flag. Okay.
Exactly. Yes.
It's going to be the commissioner of one of those conferences. And I don't have a problem with that at all. Again, looking at it and talking Southeast Conference and Big Ten, I took a look at the rankings, and if the season were to finish the way this poll has it, I looked at the Southeast Conference and Big Ten in comparison. Total top 25, there's 8 Southeast Conference teams, 6 Big Ten teams. For the playoffs, there's 4 Southeast Conference teams, 3 Big Ten teams. And by the way, Illinois is 12th. They would get bumped by the Group of 5 team, so they wouldn't make it, or else they'd also have 4. If you expanded the playoffs to 16 teams, the Southeast Conference would have 6. The Big Ten would have 5. What does that tell you, Dustin? Anything?
Oh boy, are you going to have to tell? Is this a legitimate question, or do you have an agenda here? I feel like I'm walking into a trap.
For the first time ever, I don't have an agenda. I'm looking because it doesn't tell me really anything. It's pretty much what we expected. The Southeast Conference typically is a little bit deeper, having one more team, but. If it would flip a little bit in the reality at the end of the year, but also the 16-team playoff without automatic bids, the Southeast Conference would get 6 teams, the Big Ten would get 5.
Yeah, it's interesting in the sense of like the SEC always seems to have one more team than the Big Ten in these polls. Sometimes two. I think we looked at the strength of schedule, and ESPN's already puffing up the SEC as having, the 12 hardest schedules are all in the SEC. I mean, it'll be interesting to see. When you first said there would be 3 Big Ten teams in the 12 team playoff, I was like, well, Illinois is number 12. And then you reminded me that we have that group of 5 to consider there. So it's going to be interesting. I do think that the 4 Big Ten teams, I think that that's ranked probably appropriately in terms of Ohio State, Penn State, then Oregon, then Illinois. I think the 2 wild cards in that are going to be Michigan and Indiana, the other 2 Big Ten teams that are ranked. We don't really know what to expect. I think Indiana might be the bigger question mark because their schedule is going to be a little bit tougher this year. They have to go on the road to Oregon, on the road to Penn State. Their non-conference isn't tough. Can they replicate that kind of success? Can they still get to 10 wins after a big year last season? Michigan, I think we've talked about, this comes down to the quarterback situation. We think. I mean, there could be more to it, but I think a lot of people are saying Michigan's a top 25 team if Bryce Underwood lives up to the hype. Maybe they're a 7-5, 8-4 team if he kind of struggles and has those freshman flaws when he comes into Ann Arbor.
Well, also, too, and these are obviously in an inexact science, which I'm going to talk about more in the next segment, but making the playoffs or not is 2 losses versus 3 losses, okay, Dustin? Mm-hmm. That one game where the ball bounces your way or not is going to determine some of those teams. But I think also in these polls, the Southeast Conference gets that benefit of the doubt. And it's the self-fulfilling prophecy with that strength and schedule. We'll talk about that more, Dustin, right after this break.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The Collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
It's quarter number 2 on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at keystonesportsnetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number 2. He is Big Ten Sports Illustrated writer Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. Our show is brought to you by GoPSURV.com. If you're still looking for a place to stay in State College, when you come in, Dustin, you got to come in. Got to try it out. What they do is you just drive your car to their place. They have an RV lot with the RV sitting there all ready for you with the electric and water. Everything's hooked up and ready to go. You just drive your car there. They have these great fire pits, outside projection TV. What might be the best part is they also have a shuttle from the RV lot to the game. So you don't worry about the hassle and parking and the parking fees and everything that comes with it. You come in on Friday, you don't have to leave until Sunday. You make a great weekend of it. If you're looking for more details, go to gopsurv.com or you could call them directly at 800-519-8467. You won't regret it. I've stayed there multiple times. It's a lot of fun, a great time. Now, Dustin, we're talking about the preseason polls. We're going with the coaches poll that had Texas number one, Ohio State two, Penn State three. You mentioned how there are places now, it's like Southeast Conference has all the toughest schedules. Why? Because their teams are ranked. Why are their teams ranked? Because they're voted that way. So it's somebody's opinion that, you know, it'd be like they voted all the SEC teams in the top 10 or in the top 25. They get the benefit of the doubt, but it doesn't determine results, but they play within their own league, so you can't tell. But what's interesting, though, Dustin, I'm going to ask now. Now I do have an agenda with this part of my question. Okay.
Oh boy.
Because I'd like to take credit for the research. I didn't do it, the research, but I saw somebody else did. Over the last 5 years, okay, the preseason top 10. Okay, how accurate do you think these preseason polls are? What do they average out being correct that out of the 10 teams they say at the beginning of the year are still in the top 10 at the end of the year?
Ooh, this is a good question. Are you looking for a percentage?
Yeah. It's the math is easy, fortunately, because I'm talking about 10 teams. So if it averages out to like five teams, let me think. I think that's 50%.
50%. Let me guess, because I saw a statistic earlier the other day, and I don't remember what it was, but it was like teams 1 through 5 who have been ranked in the preseason poll have won X amount of the last 10 national champs or something like that, and it was fairly accurate. I'm going to say out of the top 10, I'm going to say 40%.
Pretty close. It's 30. Four out of the 5 years, they were 5-5.
Okay.
They got 5 out of 10 correctly. Is that good, do you think?
That's, you know what? I think that's, look, I'll take batting 50% based on, especially, let me throw this out there. It is a lot more difficult now to predict how teams are going to perform versus 10, 20, 30 years ago because you have so much turnover, so much change. You got to factor in who left for the draft, who went to the transfer portal, what teams are returning, what they're not. Like, to me, you got to evaluate schedule. The conferences are bigger. So I think I would take that 50%. If they said, Dustin, you get a chance to rank the top 10 teams, and I finish the year with 5 of the top 10 correct, I would take that and crack game. A beverage.
You'd crack the beverage either way, but which is irrelevant to our the question. See, now I'm not sure because over the last 5 years, but even if you go a little bit further, you got to assume Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, you start out with those three teams in your top 10. Sure. And they're going to be there. I know Alabama just last year wasn't. I get that's post Nick Saban. But right. It's almost like there's three or four gimmies. So your record with the rest of the top 10 probably isn't so hot. What I also found fascinating, and the article was kind of confusing, it named teams that, you know, they tried to what's their average variance, where they rank them versus where they finish. The problem with that is I'm not sure how they did it. It's like if this year you were +3, last year you were -3, oh boy, we were right on with them, you know?
Right, yep.
But here are names of four teams that get overestimated pretty much every year.
Wait, is this just top 10 teams?
Yeah, of teams, yes.
So let me,
or at least let's say highly ranked teams, but there's a huge variance. They finish, they're a disappointment based on where they were put in the preseason poll.
I have two immediate guesses, and I may be wrong, but these are the two that come to mind. Texas A&M and Miami.
You got one. A&M.
Okay.
I should look to see where Miami is in the art. But the other one, LSU.
Okay.
USC.
Oh, that's a good one. Yep. Okay.
And here's one you're going to kick yourself for not getting. Oklahoma.
Oh, that kind of surprises me. But they've been not good the last couple. Well, no, they were good 2 years ago, I guess. Last year was a disappointment. Oklahoma surprises me a little bit because they went to the playoffs a few years with Lincoln Riley.
And, well, that leads to my next question for you. And looking at the poll, are you surprised Oklahoma's not in it in the top 25? Is there anyone else that surprises you that's not in it or surprises you that they are in it?
No, I don't think Oklahoma. No, because Oklahoma was bad last year. Golly, that's a great question. I don't think. Now, I've got to preface this by saying that my brain is fixated towards the Big Ten. So, and then, you know, usually secondary is the SEC. So I really don't think, based on last year and what we've seen transpire, I guess, well, you're going to hate me for saying this one, Jim.
Go ahead.
I guess the one that I would think might be ranked that's not would be Iowa.
I could see that the argument for them. I really can. You know, if they're in that whole, I would put them in, and this gives me a chance to segue to it. There are four Big 12 teams between 20 and 24, actually. Kansas State, Iowa State, BYU, and Texas Tech. And I think that's kind of like the just crazy, close your eyes, throw the dart, and see which teams you hit.
Right.
Is that your puppy I hear in the background?
That was. That's why I hit the mute button, because I saw him headed towards the water dish.
But Iowa is among those teams where there'd be no surprise if they finish the season in the top 25.
Here is another one. And I think we were critical of them last year because we thought that they were maybe a little overhyped. Missouri is another one that's not in the top coaches top 25 that I feel like a lot of people might be high on this year. So that one's a little bit surprising to me too. Now, again, there might be some teams in other conferences that I just am not thinking of off the top of my head, but it's basically the Big Ten and the SEC. So I'll say those two schools who ironically played in a bowl game last year and Mizzou won. So,
well, the thing with I'm going to bring Paul Feinbaum up in this conversation here. So it pains me to say this, but the Southeast Conference is the deeper conference than the Big Ten. And it's in that way, it's a little bit like the Big 12. You could say, and I agree, the Southeast Conference is the better conference. But there are so many teams, you know, would you – like Tennessee is in this, Florida is in this, Ole Miss is in this. But would it surprise you if Missouri or Oklahoma finished ahead of those teams?
No, probably not. Probably not. And can I push back on this that the SEC is deeper?
Sure.
Just slightly. I don't totally disagree, but there is a little bit of a inherent, what would be the correct term here? Almost lopsidedness, for lack of a better phrase. I'm a writer. I should know vocabulary, but I don't.
A couple weeks off. Well, you're
that's right. But the Big Ten has 18 teams. So there's two more teams. So if you took, let's say you took out Northwestern and Purdue from last year, or Maryland, either one, I don't know that it's that much different. I think you could, like, and I think part of it, too, is me going into this season with a lot of questions about this season, like what is Maryland going to look like? What about Michigan State? Are they going to make a big leap? Wisconsin's schedule's like, there's a lot of question marks. I think you're correct. I think this year the SEC is going to be deeper than the Big Ten. But we also have to acknowledge that, like, there's also two more teams in the Big Ten. And when you have that many teams, you're going to have two teams that are going to be pretty bad. So I think that there's just a – and they're playing nine conference games, and the SEC plays only eight. So I think that there's some inherent – I'm going to use my word lopsidedness again – fixated in there. So I don't necessarily disagree with you, but I think that that needs to be said because there is – they don't have to deal with those other two other teams being potentially horrid.
I think over a longer stretch, Southeast Conference has been deeper. I think the last 2 years, by winning the national championship, the high representation in the at the playoffs advanced, you know, you had an Ohio State blow out of Tennessee. You had other bowl games where it was head-to-head. And we tend to give the benefit of the doubt to a team like Alabama, who was fairly average a year ago.
Right.
You know, where they lost to a not good Vanderbilt team, a not good Oklahoma team. If a Iowa or an Indiana had played an Alabama schedule with the same result, you would have nicked them for those losses.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
But Alabama being Alabama, they get the benefit of the doubt. And that's what you see it going on. And I think all of us give them that benefit of the doubt. Maybe not as much as Paul Feinbaum. When we come back, I want to talk about transfer portals, but I'm also going to give you a Paul Feinbaum quote to start us off when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, quarter number three of our show. He's Dustin, I'm Jim. We're talking all things college football. Just to wrap up this whole conversation about the polls, and where they have teams. It's mostly not just about the individual teams, but also Big Ten versus Southeast Conference. Just everything that's going on in college football leads you to that conversation. And I can't help myself. You know, Paul Feinbaum still comes out with this. The SEC's the better conference. I'll move to another country if the Southeast Conference doesn't win the national championship this year. And there's no way Penn State could win a national championship because they have James Franklin as their coach. Really? And I suspect if you asked him this before last season and the season before when Michigan and Ohio State won it all, he probably would have said the same thing. I don't think anyone could say they can guarantee either conference winning a national championship this year. The best teams are from those two conferences, and I could name you at least five or six teams from each or total between the two conferences that could win it all.
Right. And so I'm going to tell you something funny that I saw the other day was Paul Feinbaum basically saying, you know, the Big Ten act like they invented football. and somebody quote tweeted that with a picture of a Rutgers statue that said the birthplace of college football. I thought that was pretty clever. And then he went on to say something like, you know, the Big Ten has done literally nothing. I'm like, they've won the national championship the last two seasons. I don't know what. This is my problem. We talked about this a long time ago. This is my problem with what college football has become. It's become nothing but the playoff. And I remember, like, we used to look forward to those week six games and those, you know, Michigan Notre Dame was a big deal. It didn't matter if both teams were terrible or both teams were undefeated. Everybody looked forward to those games. Everybody looked forward to Texas Oklahoma. And it's not to say that people don't look forward to those games, but we just kind of overshed, like, the only game people are going to talk about on Penn State's schedule, the only two are against Oregon and Ohio State. Those are the only two games, whereas if you had a undefeated Penn State and a one- or two-loss Iowa team going into Kinnick Stadium, that back in the day, that used to get, like, maybe national attention. Just the idea of an upset, like, not everybody was going to get – but now if you're not a college football playoff team, it seems like nobody cares. The other thing that's, like, crazy is we got kids playing, what, 17, 18 football games? There's so much that has to go right to win a national championship now. It's not just one extra game. You have to stay healthy the entire season. You got to make sure the schedule pans out correctly. It's just there's so many factors involved these days with these mega conferences and playing potentially four playoff games. I don't know why anybody would guarantee anything for anyone when you have to have – there's so many factors that play into it. It's almost become like the MLB, right? I mean, not to that extent, but you understand what I'm saying. There's so much that has to go right for you to win a World Series. You can have the best roster, but if somebody gets hurt, that could completely tear up your lineup. It's the same thing now with college football.
Well, and it is about when are you, like in Major League Baseball, are you hot in September into October? Right. Are you the best team then? A year ago, when the season started, I felt Ohio State was the best team in the country. Mm-hmm. They didn't necessarily play that way with a loss to Oregon, a bad loss to Michigan. But come playoff time, was there any doubt that right. they were the best team in the country? And the other thing where let me start with this. I am part of the problem, okay? I am, me personally. I am part of the problem because I literally have talked to people on this show and said, well, is it a two-game season for Penn State? Is it all about Oregon and Ohio State? And it is by national perception. Penn State could win those, go 10-0 in those other games, and nationally, it will not matter, okay?
Right.
It won't. All that matters is those two. However, with that said, among Penn State fans and Iowa fans, and I think true football fans, boy, if they make that a night game, Penn State at Kinnick Stadium, Penn State, Iowa, first of all, that is going to be a great scene. Night game, mm-hmm. Iowa. That crowd will be going crazy having Penn State in. And if they were undefeated, but even with, say, a loss and Penn State's in either undefeated or lost, that's going to be a huge game. It really will be. I think Indiana coming to Penn State will be a big game because of what Indiana did a year ago. Mm-hmm. So I get the point you're making, and I think there's a national perception. But I think among the fans, there's still a lot of other games. A year ago, I'll give the other – when Penn State went to USC, nationally it may not have been a big deal, but it was a big deal to Penn State fans and USC fans.
Right. And I think – so my – I think it is still a big deal, like I said, to those fans and like you said – people are still going to care about that game, but it's almost like those are the only, from a national perspective, that if you lose those games, then everybody's question, we tend to focus on the losses more than the wins. So if Penn State goes 10-2, that's still a really good football. any team that goes 10-2 is going to be really good. You can argue how good Indiana was last year and how much the schedule. The bottom line is you're not winning 11 games if you're not a good football team, right? Like, you have to be good to win that many games in a 12 week or whatever it is, 13, 14 week span. But we're so hyper fixated on the losses and what that means. And James Franklin's a fraud and blah, 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 blah. All this stuff. To me, it just seems like we tend to focus on there's nothing wrong with, I think even 20 years ago, we'd look at Penn State's schedule and say, boy, Ohio State and Oregon, those are the two big games on Penn State. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think the biggest problem is we're going to determine Penn State season just based on those two games, when it's like, to me, you're still a 10-win team. It's still a really good football team. Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
It does. And a little bit, I'm going to sound hypocritical because I'm going to play both sides, okay? And Penn State at 10-2, it's their own fault that they're being looked at nationally, and 10-2 will be a disappointment if they lose those two games.
Sure.
And I've said this multiple times on this show. Oregon and Ohio State, for very different reasons, it does not matter if they finish the regular season undefeated with one loss or with two losses. Irrelevant. Because a year ago, Oregon was undefeated and got nowhere in the playoffs. Right. A year ago, Ohio State had two losses and won the national championship. So I think as long as those two teams have either 0-1 or two losses and make the playoffs, they're just going to be judged based on their performance in the playoffs. That's it. Penn State has put themselves in the position that even going into the playoffs and beating SMU and beating Boise State doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Boise State was undefeated in the regular season. Their only loss was on the road, a close loss to the number one ranked undefeated Oregon Ducks. Boise State, a top 10 team because of that, didn't matter that Penn State beat them. Irrelevant to the national audience. They have to win one of those, Oregon or Ohio State, or in the playoffs, Notre Dame. They have to be a big name. They put themselves in that position. Now, last thought on that, it's always James Franklin is like 1-11 versus Ohio State.
Right.
So he's a bad coach. He can't win those games. I will point out, though, to you, do you know he covered the spread in most of those games, a majority of the games?
I believe that,
I know W's and L's. But what the point spread tells you is what the expectation level was going into those games. And James Franklin exceeded those expectations. And is it a question of, gee, is that fair, Jim, using the point spread? Well, how about the acquisition of talent? Ohio State, every year they have a top five ranking in recruiting. Penn State, it's an outlier if they're top 10 in recruiting. So I don't understand. I do get it. There's some games where he's had leads against Ohio State and they haven't been able to finish it. But when you're a Paul Feinbaum and criticize James Franklin, don't just say he lost those games. If you're going to blame him, tell me what he did wrong in those games. Tell me the decisions you would have made different, Paul Feinbaum. Tell me the mistakes he made.
Right. No, I completely agree. And, but it's easy to just throw cold water on the situation and James Franklin hasn't accomplished anything and yada, yada, yada. But the Ohio State measuring stick is always an interesting one because, well, nobody really beats them. Michigan has had a really good run against them. But if you look at everybody else, like yes, James Franklin should be better than 1-11. I think we can all agree on that. But if he wins 2 or 3, this isn't even a conversation. People would be like, well, James Franklin's beat Ohio State 4 times. It's the margin for error is so minuscule. And I do understand if you're Penn State, you want to beat Ohio. You want to be to that level where you're beating Ohio State consistently, at least 50-50. So I do understand that. But it's not like Ohio State is Michigan State or just some run-of-the-mill average team. That's an elite team that gets the best players every single season. And who knows, maybe once, if Penn State's able to get over the hurdle like Michigan was, maybe they'll rattle off four or five straight over the Buckeyes. Who knows?
And I'll tell you what, I know I'm sounding like the James Franklin apologist here, but going into this season, they're a consensus top five team. That's the expectation level for this team. And this is a team where Penn State has had one top 10 recruiting class with James Franklin. One. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people saying he's going to win a national championship with this team, or he's got that much talent. I think you have to point that out and give credit for the talent acquisition, the talent development, the scouting that they do to be even in that position against some of these teams that have such an advantage over the recruiting and also a financial advantage when it comes to for the transfer portal. That's my way, Dustin, of segueing into our quarter four topic. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk transfer portal when we get back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four of the show. He's Dustin. I'm Jim. We're talking college football. Dustin, we went a little bit long. We went an extra segment on the college football polls. That's fine. I did want to get to you, though. I saw an interesting article, and these are all over the place, the impact transfer portal players. And what I wanted to talk to you about is those players, the impact players that have come into the Big Ten, maybe a little bit the players that have left some of the Big Ten teams. And it's an interesting list. I got from a national list. I filtered it out, just got to the players that are relevant to the Big Ten. And there becomes a couple obvious topics. And I think one of them, and it's got to be near and dear to your heart as a guy who is close to the Purdue program. Boy, Purdue got slaughtered by the transfer portal, didn't they?
They sure did. They sure did. I mean, it didn't take – I think Barry Odom said in his first team meeting they had 40 guys in there that you know, were basically willing to hear him out. So they brought in 51 – they've got 82 new players on their roster, 51 from the transfer portal, 30-some in terms of incoming recruits and JUCO players. So, yeah, I think that's the – I can't remember. It's definitely the most in the Big Ten. I think it's the most in FBS too, in terms of transfer portal acquisition.
Some of it, though, I think, Dustin, have to look at it like, okay, what talent leaves? And mm-hmm. A lot of it is the player who is not playing. Gee, I'm a backup to a guy who's an underclassman or has more eligibility than me. I don't see a clear path to playing. And I don't want to say you don't care because they're part of the depth, but what's interesting is how Purdue got hit at the top of their talent level. Two players that are, very, very good players, are actually three of them. You know they're good players because of where they went. Defensive back, Dylan, am I pronouncing it right? Thienemann?
Thienemann.
Thienemann. went from Purdue to Oregon. Max Clair. We at least we know that name as Penn State fans. We saw him play tight end. Purdue to Ohio State. And then a defensive end, edge rusher, Will Help, went from Purdue to Clemson. Okay. These are top 10 teams that that kind of talent is leaving for, Dustin. So, yes, I understand quantity, but this is the situation. Is this the situation of the poor getting poorer or the rich getting richer at the top end of the talent pool?
Yeah, I think in terms of – in this specific instance, I think it's too early to tell. I know Purdue's NIL is not going to be – it's not going to match like Ohio State or Michigan or Penn State or some of those other programs, but it's in a pretty good spot. Now, Purdue was so bad last year. And so if you're a player that was on a 1-11 roster and you have to go through another rebuild situation – and especially for some of those guys who are now going to be, I think all of them may be juniors, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong, but I think they're all juniors. Do I want to go through a rebuild to maybe get to a bowl game by my senior season? Or do I want to go to a place where I can maybe play for starting, you know, I can be a starter, or at least a significant contributor, and I can be on a team that competes for an ACC championship or a Big Ten championship and even a national championship? I think that that's the question. It's what's going to be interesting, because this isn't the first year. Purdue lost Deion Burks, one of their best wide receiver from 2023, left to go to Oklahoma. Nick Skorton, there's the Big Ten sack leader from 2023, went to Texas A&M. So Purdue's had to deal with this in the past. Now, I think we can all agree that they did not have the best coaching staff in place. So, again, I think there's some questions here, but I think by and large, you are going to see some of those top-end players at some point probably get poached. Now, if Purdue turns into a situation where, like Indiana, I don't know their transfer portal numbers off the top of my head, but I don't remember a lot of major big-time players leaving Indiana to go to like Alabama or Clemson or Penn State or Ohio State. So if you can win, I think that and Purdue's NIL situation is in a good enough spot where if they could produce a 9-10 win team regularly, I think that poaching doesn't happen. But if you're a 5-7 win team, those big boys are probably going to still come in and be able to take your top end talent. Winning, as much as we talk about NIL and transfer portal and money and all that stuff, winning is still important to these kids. Now, it's not always going to be the end all be all, but I think in this situation, if you can eventually get it to a place where you're competitive in the Big Ten, then you're in good shape. The question, though, Jim, is can they actually do that? Can they have an Indiana or an Illinois type season where they're competing for maybe not a Big Ten championship, but they're competing for that fourth playoff spot?
I think, Dustin, and you brought up some good examples with Indiana and Illinois, and Indiana is Exhibit A with a coaching staff coming in, bringing in a lot of their players from James Madison, okay? They didn't bring in players from – you know, top-tier teams necessarily, and they developed the talent, won some games, and built up the confidence of their players. Purdue did just the opposite. You know,
yeah.
My take on Purdue was based on one game, Penn State versus Purdue, and it was obvious Purdue was physically outmatched in that game, but they were also – totally unprepared, made yeah. crazy mistakes that a high school team shouldn't make. So, you know, yeah. it's like, who would want to stay with that program? If you're Max Clair yes. with an opportunity to go to Ohio State and get on the field and play, that means something. And you see some of these teams, I think Syracuse is a great example of, you know, poaching quarterbacks from teams. And even they go get the Ohio State backup quarterback, or actually their starter from the previous year, and the guy yeah. has a big year for them. They're looking to repeat that. And speaking of repeating, and I think the quarterback position is one of those places, Indiana They went out and poached the Cal quarterback, who is a pretty good quarterback. But Indiana has shown they did it with Curtis Rourke. If you're Fernando Mendoza, don't you look at Indiana now and say, hey, this is an opportunity for me. Are they Ohio State or Oregon? No. But that was quite an offense and gave the quarterback a chance to look very good and get an NFL opportunity. So I'm going to get that. So, you know, that's the other thing I want to talk to you about is the quarterbacks who are in this transfer list. UCLA went out and got Nico from Tennessee. Indiana went to Cal. Iowa went to South Dakota State, you know, to find a quarterback. So, you know, maybe one could take that as me being, you know, facetious that you go to South Dakota State. But that's a pretty good program at that level.
Yeah, it is.
And there are some people who feel that's a big time quarterback there, Dustin.
No, I agree. He's gotten a lot of hype. I'm in believe it when I see it mode with Iowa, just because we've been fooled. Every quarterback that they've had in the last 5 years is supposed to be this game changing guy, and it hasn't been the case. So I'm still hesitant on that. But let me ask you this, Jim, and you may have asked a question, and I'm just gonna let it go right over. This is legitimate. I don't know in terms of the, I think this is only maybe not specifically quarterback, but quarterback's where it's going to be the most evident and probably the most important. Which type of programs benefit most from this transfer portal? Because I feel like you could make the argument that some of these, like UCLA, now this was a completely botched situation, the Nico situation, but let's say he wasn't the starter and he's a four-star, I don't know what his ranking was as high school recruit, but he's a four-star, five-star kid. He's probably not going to UCLA out of high school. If in the old days he's at Tennessee, he's staying at Tennessee until he's at least a grad transfer. Now UCLA gets an opportunity to get one of the best quarterbacks in college football. Same thing with Syracuse, with Kyle McCord. Maybe he wasn't up to Ohio State standards, but he's certainly a lot better than anything Syracuse has had, right? So I understand, too, if you have a breakout year, a Will Howard is going to go from Kansas State to Ohio State. And there's certainly other examples of that. But it almost kind of works out because there's some of these – instead of Ohio State and Alabama, Clemson, loading up on these four- and five-star kids, now kids are like, I'm not sticking around. I'm going to enter the transfer portal and I'm going to leave. And they may go to an Indiana or in Illinois, like Luke Altmaier, Fernando Mendoza. It's interesting, and I don't know that I really realized that until we started talking about it, but you could make the argument that some of these other schools are getting more of a chance because, again, there's probably other running backs, offensive linemen, but it's probably most noticeable in the quarterback room where maybe a kid's a four-star kid and he's a second or third-string guy at Florida State. But man, Iowa would kill to have that guy. And Northwestern would kill to have that guy.
And this is why so many people are critical of the transfer portal. But I want to say, support your argument. All right. And the argument typically is, oh, rich get richer and poor get poorer. And there are examples of it. Purdue, we talked about it. But overall, it's just like anything else. Who is smart at it? And there could be multiple strategies. A year ago for Indiana, he brought half his James Madison team with him. It was successful. At Penn State, they're very particular with their going to the portal. But you know what? They had a problem at wide receiver. They brought in three guys.
Yeah.
They had a surprise at linebacker leave, okay? Guess what? They went out and got a linebacker specifically because of the loss, plugging holes. Oregon lost a lot of talent from a very good team a year ago. They plugged the holes. Ohio State, a year ago, boy, were they good at combining. We have all the great recruits. We're going to fill in holes where we need, and we need a veteran quarterback. Let's go get one. I give credit for teams for doing that, Dustin.
Yeah, I mean, if it's within the rules and it's part of the game now, then why wouldn't you take advantage of it? It's just, to me, it's like if you are, I mean, essentially you're correct. Now, Kurt Cignetti had an advantage in the sense that he was at James Madison and could bring his whole team. But you can make the argument for both lower programs and higher programs are benefiting from the transfer portal.
And the players, Dustin.
Yes.
And the players. All right. That's it for our show. Thank you, Dustin. Thank all of you for tuning in. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Rebel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Rebel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to RebelXP.com for more info.